Welcome to What the Health, a podcast where we explore the key health issues that are often dismissed. I'm James Jensen, a functional medical practitioner and owner of Hella Health, a holistic clinic focused on treating the root cause of issues rather than the symptoms, by connecting the dots and giving you practical and evidence-based solutions.
And I'm Julie Johnston, one of James's clients, and I also happen to be his PR consultant who, let's be honest, basically strong-armed him into doing this podcast.
So if you've been going around in circles, feeling dismissed and not getting the results you deserve, then you're in the right place.
Because as you always say, James, just because something is common doesn't mean it's normal.
Exactly. So let's drill down to what's really going on.
Well, James, here we are, episode 10 of season one of What the Health. What a great start to the podcasting season we've had so far. We have talked about some great topics from children's health, weight loss, hormones, perimenopause, thyroid, sleep. And, you know, one of the common threads with all of these, it all comes back to our gut health, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So, yeah, Hippocrates, the famous godfather of medicine, or grandfather rather, maybe not a mobster, he says that all disease begins in the gut. And, you know, with more and more research, he's right. So smart man, all those, you know, thousands of years before us.
Yep. So I think it makes the perfect topic for us to delve in a little bit more for our episode today. So, you know, tell us a little bit more about the gut.
Sure. So, you know, even just crazy sort of facts, things like, you know, if you were to lay the gut out, you know, surface area wise, 2 football fields, roughly.
Really?
Yes. So it's massive. And I say to people, if your gut's pissed off, your body's pissed off, which makes sense. So if you've got 2 football fields worth of, you know, aggravated unhappiness, you can't expect anything to go right. You know, other facts that people find interesting is that, you know, there's more bacteria in our gut than stars in the Milky Way.
Wow.
And if we also think about it in terms of like numbers, there's actually more like bacterial cells than we actually have cells. So we're technically more bacteria than we are anything else.
Wow. And not all bacteria are the same, are they?
No. So what we consider like a good, healthy or diverse microbiome is someone that had, you know, or has, you know, more than 150 different species. So that's considered quite healthy. And then the lower the diversity, I guess, the, you know, the poorer the gut health and likely the poorer the body.
Yeah. And you've sort of explained it before in terms of that, you know, when we have too many bugs, it can get a little bit overcrowded. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, so we often see things like bacterial overgrowth, and that doesn't mean that we've got too many different species, because remembering I was saying variety is the spice of life, so we want lots of different species, but we don't want them overgrown or any particular species overgrowing the others. So yeah, we commonly see like bacterial overgrowth as creating a lot of digestive upset. So if we think of bacteria's job is really, well, what they do is they eat our food, and they produce compounds. Some of those compounds are good and some of those are bad depending on the bacteria. So if we have a bacterial overgrowth and we're feeding it lovely nutritious foods that are full of fiber, because bacteria love fiber, we might see things like, you know, bloating, gas, you know, all that sort of inflammatory type stuff. That can push on the immune system and create more inflammation. So we might see people with, you know, joint pain, for example. We might see things like you know, inflammation in terms of neurological stuff. So we might see people that are depressed because of, you know, the way their gut plays up. Definitely autoimmune conditions, you know, so things like rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's, thyroid conditions. So definitely like the gut bacteria, if it's overgrown or in the wrong balance, it definitely plays a big role. And equally, not enough bacteria also plays a, you know, has a lot of negative consequences too. So it's all about getting that balance right.
Yeah, right. And so how do we get that balance right?
So the typical rules really are about eating lots of different fibers. So again, that varied diet. So not just eating, you know, chicken, rice and broccoli all day, because we're only going to, you know, feed certain amounts of species. So it's that variety. And you know, I know we've mentioned earlier, but eating seasonally as well. So, you know, if we eat with the seasons and we're eating lots of variety of foods, we're going to feed lots of different bacteria, which is going to promote that bacterial diversity. You know, I guess you could think of it a bit like a rainforest. We don't want just all one type of tree. We want to have lots of different organisms and species. That's what makes it wonderful.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. It's like this whole little thriving ecosystem in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two football fields worth, apparently.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, same goes with, you know, the addition of things like herbs and spices. So herbs and spices might have an antimicrobial effect. So if we're worried about developing a bacterial overgrowth, those herbs and spices might kill certain species and might feed others. So that's why variety really is the spice of life when it comes to eating for a healthy gut.
Yeah. And, you know, another analogy that I know you like to use to help people visualize it is that it can be like a garden with too many plants.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So I try and use as many analogies as I can when
talking to people. It is actually really helpful for breaking things down and helping us understand.
Yeah. So again, to use that analogy, if we've got, you know, when we talk about treatment, you know, if we've got like a bacterial overgrowth, you know, the last thing that you usually need to do, if say your lawn is overgrown mm-hmm. and you've got weeds full of it, we don't necessarily want to throw grass seeds on it to try and get it back. So what we'll often do is we'll use, you know, herbs or spices blends, which actually kill off the bacteria that we don't want. So you can get what you call selective antimicrobials. So they selectively poison the bacteria that we don't want, and they'll feed and nourish the ones that we want. So I refer to it as like weeding and feeding.
Yeah. Yeah. And what are some of the supplements that you recommend that can really help with this process?
Yeah, so the common one that we will use, which I know you're a massive fan of the flavour, is called Gut Right. So Gut Right's a great product.
It takes a little getting used to, but I promise people you do get used to it and the results are really helpful.
Yeah, so it takes all the guesswork out of eating that variety. So you've got lots of different fibres in there that will feed the bugs that you do want and help clear out the ones that you don't want. There's also another product we use really commonly now called Intesta Select, which is a capsule, which now that I'm admitting to you that you could have done it with a capsule.
James, sometimes I feel like you're out to get me.
That's right. But yeah, the capsule's great as well. So it's not as broad spectrum, but what it does do is that, again, it selectively pulls the weeds out and it's a bit more potent at doing that. So, and one of the advantages of doing that is if you think of it like taking antibiotics, which just kill everything, if you're able to selectively just pull the guys out that you don't want, so yeah, think of it like weeding by hand, what happens there is because it's standing room only in your gut, you don't want to just kill things, you know, so think of it like spraying Roundup on your lawn, anything can grow back, so you can kill things off. But if we're pulling the weeds out, the grass that we do want, or, you know, the plants that we do want, will go and occupy that space, which then, you know, inhibits other dodgy bugs that we don't necessarily want from landing in there. So that's why I like to do it that way, because it's a lot faster, a lot less side effects and a lot less work in the end.
Wow, that is such a great explanation. And so once you've, I guess, kind of done that groundwork, you've done the weeding and, you know, the good bugs have started to sort of take up that space in the standing room only area, does that mean it's then so much easier to maintain with healthy diet and lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. So if the gut is out of whack, like I said, you could be eating a great diet. And this is the people that I see. They go, look, I've cut this out, I've cut that out, and, you know, I'm still getting symptoms. And it's because they're still eating lots of fibers and things like that, which is great. And that's what we need. But if we've got the right bacteria there and we're feeding them those good foods, everything's a nice, happy balance. So it's really about getting that base right. So again, if you've got your lawn with all the right grass in there and you just keep fertilizing it and watering it, it's going to stay nice. It's when we throw it out of whack, you know, with things like antibiotics or start eating the wrong foods that are going to feed the wrong bacteria, that's where we see those imbalances. So if people, you know, do a bit of a gut protocol and they keep their diet great, it really does last. And, you know, the other thing is with getting the gut right, it does set it up for the right balance. So even if you do have, you know, the occasional naughty meal or a weekend away where you're not eating, you know, the things you necessarily would be, the gut's then already resilient enough to not go completely haywire. So that's why, you know, if we do it properly and we do it thoroughly the first time, we don't really need to, or shouldn't have to do anything else too crazy after that.
Yeah. And, you know, what you said just then about, you know, like that if we've set it up right, we can have the odd indulgence and we can cope quite okay with it. Is that kind of why we find that people start to experience some gut issues kind of a little bit later in life, that, you know, when they're a bit younger, their gut is a bit more resilient and they're able to sort of cope with those indulgences, but over time it's built up and the dodgy bacteria have started to have quite the party in there, and that's why we then start to have issues and can't cope?
Yep, definitely that can be part of it. You know, I also think about things like pesticide exposure. So often there's pesticides in our tap water. Mm. There's definitely pesticides and, you know, herbicides that we come in contact with through our fruits and vegetables. So what they're there for is they're there for killing bugs. So we can imagine if we're eating these nice healthy foods that have been exposed to those things and drinking that water, they're killing bacteria too. So again, this is why, like, you can imagine with 20 years of pesticides swallowing every day, you're still going to get a reduction of that microbial diversity just, you know, through seemingly or unknowingly doing, you know, the wrong thing. So that's why those things can sneak up on you. And then I guess to talk about things like hormonal influence as well. So around menopause, those hormones that have changed, they are also anti-inflammatory and also change our sensitivity to allergens. So that's why, again, women during perimenopause or menopause, they go, all of a sudden, I can't eat this and I can't eat that. And it's because those hormones have like an antihistamine and an anti-allergy or anti-inflammatory impact. So then with the lack or the change of those hormones, they then start experiencing more, you know, allergies and sensitivities.
Wow. Okay. That is so interesting. And, you know, I know you ran through, you know, some of the symptoms before, you know, like we talked about skin, mood, weight, bowel issues, mental health conditions like depression and things like that. So, you know, they're certainly the symptoms to look out for. But are there also some physical ways that you can kind of identify if it might be time to have a look at your gut?
Yeah. So definitely like looking at, you know, even tongues can tell you quite a lot. So it's a bit funny when I say, can you poke your tongue out, please? And some people look at me a bit strangely, but your tongue will often tell me quite a few things. So if we're suspecting that there might be a candida overgrowth, you'll often see plaquing and, you know, like a bit of a white coating on the tongue. So that's something that I'll often look for if I'm, you know, suspecting that candida might be an issue. Any sort of like redness or inflammation on the skin. Another common one for gut sensitivity and in particular gluten sensitivity is keratosis pilaris is the medical term. The more colloquial term is chicken skin. So that's on the backs of the arms, those little red dots and things like that. Ah. So that's often an indication of gluten sensitivity. So that's one that we'll look at. And we'll also look at nails as well, because lots of ridging and lots of lines can be a sign of poor mineral absorption. So we go, well, maybe there's a problem with digestive enzymes or poor absorption. So yeah, we often look at those physical symptoms too.
Yeah, fantastic. So for anyone that can sort of, I suppose, relate to some of those symptoms, you know, both the emotional and the physical that we've talked about, you know, what's your recommendation to them?
Yeah, so I think really simple things is, you know, even if it's like doing a food diary where you go, oh, look, actually, every time I eat gluten, I feel more tired. Yeah. Or, you know, it might be about doing a bit of trial and error like many people do before they see me. They'll go, oh, look, I've worked out that every time I eat garlic, I feel bloated or I feel gassy. And with that information, I can help be a bit more specific around what could be going on. But, you know, simple things like a bit of a food diary or being more mindful about what you're eating is a really great start. And, you know, it might be really obvious things like you go, well, look, I just don't tolerate dairy very well. So, again, you just might be something that you just go, look, I just can't have much dairy, and then that's it. But again, if there's people that say there's a lot of foods that they work out that they can't eat, or it doesn't follow any specific pattern, that's where we start looking at things like that bacterial imbalance. Because rather than it being an actual allergy or an intolerance to that specific food, it might be that the food's feeding the bacteria and the bacteria is creating that inflammatory response with the immune system. And like we're saying, bacteria just eat food. So, you know, if someone's, you know, got a long list of foods they can't eat, the first thing I start thinking about is, you know, bacterial imbalance as opposed to, you know, specific allergies. the last thing I want people to do is have to cut out 50 different foods and keep a long list of things. I mean, you can only imagine how horrible that would be to try and go out for dinner.
Oh, it makes it so difficult. So by then, I guess sort of doing that reset, that weeding, using those supplements and things like that and being really mindful for that period of time, you can then get back on track so you can enjoy some of those favourite foods again and not be so restricted.
Yeah. And one key thing, I guess, that we haven't quite touched on yet is the actual gut lining itself. So the gut lining is really, like I say to people, it's that front door, it's that front fence that can, I guess, is regulating between the outside world. So, you know, the bacteria and the foods we eat. It's that door that locks nice and tightly shut from the inside world where our immune system is. Mm. So if many people have heard of the term leaky gut, and the, I guess, medical term for that is gastrointestinal hyperpermeability, which is why we say leaky gut.
Leaky gut is so much easier to say.
But yeah, I say to people, it's like not being able to lock your front door and expecting to feel safe at night. Mm. So your immune system becomes shoot first, ask questions later if your gut is leaky. And often it's about healing and sealing that, so then the immune system doesn't have to be so reactive. So again, as part of our protocols, we'll always work on healing and sealing the gut lining, rejigging the bacteria, whether that be through changes in diet or, like as you suggested, use of different supplements. And most of the time that gets everyone pretty well happy.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that is a fabulous wrap up of, some of the gut health and how it all ties in with lots of other, symptoms and issues that people might be experiencing. So we're starting to come to the end of the season. We'll move on to our last couple of frequently asked questions. The first question that we have for you today, James: since I had my new baby, my sex drive just hasn't been what it was. I don't want this to start affecting my relationship. Is this the new normal, or can I do something to help restore my libido?
Yeah, so obviously very common. I do say to people, I think it's a meme I saw on Facebook once. It's, how to turn a woman on, and it's a picture of a cockpit, like a pilot's cockpit, where there's all these switches and dials and all these things. And then there's the male, how to turn a male on, and it's just a light switch on and off.
Yep.
So libido is quite complicated, and, yes, there's hormonal impacts, which we'll talk about, but certainly, you can imagine if you're postpartum, there's a good chance that you're probably not getting the sleep that you'd normally get, feeling tired, run down. So it's pretty normal to not, feel as sexy, and, libido will adaptively reduce. And then to talk about like the hormones. So I've mentioned in previous episodes about prolactin and progesterone. So progesterone is really important for like driving libido. So let's just say someone's just had a new baby and they're breastfeeding. That prolactin, which is, helping with milk supply, that suppresses progesterone. So again, really the body isn't interested in, having another baby.
Yeah.
So libido will, I guess, naturally and adaptively be a bit lower as well. So my advice would be for all the men out there to start cleaning, to start doing the dishes, hang out the washing, and cook dinner. I know that's always worked for me. But all joking aside, again, it's really about making sure that the body is feeling as good as it can be. So it might be about, is there poor sleep that doesn't need to be poor? So quite often, women will be adapting and adjusting to, waking up frequently for feeds, and then baby might be sleeping through, but they're still not. So, we might be working on sleep, because, what we do know is that libido is a parasympathetic type action. So it's what we say is like parasympathetic is like rest and digest. So the body's calm, happy, relaxed. So we were looking at things like, how do we get stress hormones down? Is it that we need a bit more magnesium or B vitamins, or is it that we need, vitamin D? Vitamin D definitely affects libido as well. So it's really about managing all the things around it and, getting sleep right. Like I said, managing stress, making sure the diet's as good, and often it'll sort itself out. So, yeah.
And, it's such a big time in a woman's life, and so many changes to the body as well that, that can play a part as well. So, yeah, some great advice there. All right, one for all us hot cross buns and chocolate lovers and, you know, the odd little tipple. But with Easter coming up, do you have any tips on how to not overindulge?
Yep, so I guess there's these different seasons where we talk about this, you know, Christmas being one and Easter being another. So we often look at, you know, again, quite topical today. So I'll often look at working with the gut. So again, things that we've mentioned before. So one of the herbs like berberine, berberine's a great herb, which what it does is it kills off a lot of the bacteria that make you, or it can increase weight gain. So we haven't quite mentioned, but some of those species in the gut are up to 20% more effective at liberating calories from food. So what we can do there is if we use herbs like berberine, so berberine will kill off a lot of those bacteria and they'll encourage what we call like skinny bugs. So the bugs that are associated with like fat burning and better, you know, regulation of things like sugar cravings. So often we'll do things like, whether it be like gut right during Easter, or we'll do things like berberine, which often means that people aren't looking for those foods. And again, those foods will feed the bacteria. So if we're eating lots of hot cross buns, we're going to feed lots of hot cross bun loving bacteria, and they will say, you know what, I need more hot cross buns. So if we're keeping a good regulation on those gut bacteria, that will often change and adapt our cravings. So that's something that we definitely do. There's the obvious things as well, like, you know, making sure you're drinking plenty of water. You know, am I actually hungry, or is it actually thirst? Those types of things. But yeah, I would say for most people that I guess get a bit of a bad roll on with some of those seasons where they go, oh, look, it's Easter, it's normally eat chocolate. If we can change the microbiome, we will often not be as interested in overindulging anyway.
Yeah.
And it also stops that delay with getting back to normal. So, yeah. You know, some of us might be going along really well with a diet plan or regime, and then we start eating chocolate and all those things and go, oh gosh, I just can't stop now. So
yeah.
So again, manipulating the gut bacteria is a great way to stop that from happening.
Yeah. And I think the great thing about you, James, is that you do come from things from a very realistic perspective, you know, like, you know, although you obviously have all this great knowledge and follow a great healthy lifestyle yourself, you know, you'll still have a couple of beers or, you know, indulge in some, you know, good food at a party and things like that. But, you know, like you said, it's about being able to manage that and have those in moderation. And because for you, you've obviously got that healthy gut that's not screaming for, you know, more and more hot cross buns, you know, you're able to sort of get through those kind of fun periods of the year without feeling like you've overindulged.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's, you know, the good old 80-20 rule. If you're doing, you know, the right thing 80% of the time, you know, you've got that little bit of freedom. So yeah, it's again, you know, age old adage, it's moderation and balance and things like that. But yeah, if you're taking care of yourself and being mindful about what you're doing, it is easy to maintain, and it's easier to maintain your weight than try and get it off. So yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, James, it has been an absolute pleasure co-hosting this What the Health podcast with you for season one. We'd like to say thank you to all the listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And, you know, if any of the listeners do have some questions or topics that they would like to cover, do you think we'd like to come back for a season two? What do you think?
I think so. Based on the feedback we've had already, I guess we'll just have to.
Well, and I've certainly been having fun picking your brain. As I said, you know, we do work in the same building together, so I get to pick your brain regularly as we're walking through the halls or catch up in the kitchen. So it's an absolute pleasure being able to share your wealth of knowledge with other people. And I'm sure you've really helped impact and help a lot of people in starting to address some of the root causes of the symptoms or issues they may be experiencing.
Thanks for the kind words, Julie, and it's been a pleasure to have you as the co-host. So thank you.
So please do get in touch with us. Let us know what content you'd like to hear more of, and we would love to see you back here for season two of What the Health.
Bye for now. We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Health. If you want to keep hearing more, follow us on the Apple Podcast app, where you'll be notified every week when we drop a new episode.
And if you love the show and want to support us, feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family, or go and leave us a review.
Yes, please help us make Julie's life easier when she's trying to market this podcast.
Of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you can go book a consultation in person or online with James to discuss all your health concerns. Head on over to www.hellohealth.au. Plus, you'll get free postage on any products you purchase.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.